The Max Kellerman Show, the podcast.
The Rockets are putting out there, obviously, right? Fertitta's putting out there. But the Rockets aren't pressed to move James Harden. Harden may want to trade, but damn it, they're going to wait for the best deal, and as they should. Harden's under contract for two more years, not just this upcoming season, but the following one. So if they're, you know, willing to have a disgruntled superstar on the team, which you could be willing to do, they don't have to make a move, but in reality, they do and they will. They will make a move. Baseball is a general manager's game. The GM is the most important member of the franchise. Football is a head coach's game. The most important member of the franchise is the head coach. They have a chance to coach longer than the quarterback will be effective. They can make lemonade out of lemons. The NBA is a superstar league. Most important member of the franchise is the franchise player. And they wield enormous power. Now, it's not that the Rockets don't have some juice here. They have leverage here. Because if it was 1 year left on Harden's contract, the Rockets couldn't do a damn thing. He would tell them exactly what's going to happen, and that's what would happen. But even with 2 years left, Harden has more leverage than the team. Well, think about it this way. You are a team that's like, I don't know, Philadelphia or someplace like that, and you go, ooh, could we use James Harden? All right, well, he says he'll only go to Brooklyn, but maybe we can entice him to come here. Are you trading Ben Simmons on the chance, like gambling, that you can talk Harden into staying in Philadelphia? You're gonna move Ben Simmons for that? I don't think so. And every team knows that. This is what happened with Anthony Davis. Kendrick Perkins on First Take today said that AD might have signed long-term in Boston, and maybe he would have, but that's not how it was being represented around the league behind closed doors, little birdie tells me. And I have pretty good information on this, you know. The league was being told behind closed doors that AD is only signing in L.A. Don't do it. By the way, that's actually responsible. It would be irresponsible because, look, someone's representative has an ongoing relationship with the teams. They're 30 buyers. You don't want to alienate them, any of them, let alone all of them or most of them or the big ones. You think that the fiduciary responsibility, of course, is to Anthony Davis and LeBron James and whoever else. I'm talking about Rich Paul now, right? But if you want an ongoing relationship with clubs, you want to give him a bum steer? Yeah, yeah, trade the farm for my guy. Yeah, yeah, maybe he'll sign there, shine them on, and then he leaves you in the lurch. No. You got to let him know. Look, the truth is, he ain't going to re-sign there. Now, maybe the truth, in fact, is he would. But his number one destination is another place, and the representative feels the thing to do is just tell the others he's not going to resign so you get your number one destination. But even if that's the case, if you're the team, can you risk it? This is what I mean. If you're Fertitta, you own the Rockets, and you need to move James Harden, you want the best deal for him. James Harden makes it known publicly that he'll only take Brooklyn. Now, Stephen A. thinks that hurts, he said it on First Take, that hurts Harden's leverage. Because now there's only one team that you really want to go to, but maybe they don't want to send you there. No, it helps his leverage. Because what it does is limit the package that the Houston Rockets can now get for Harden. If you're the Sixers and you don't know you can make him stay, or some other team that wants Harden and you're like, he really wants to be in Brooklyn with KD and Kyrie. They're playing these secret games out in L.A. and they like the way it is. That's what they want to do. You're going to not offer the Rockets the same package that you would if you thought he was going to re-sign with you. Because it's a rental. Now, it's not a half-year rental or a year rental. It's not. He has 2 years left on the deal. So that price that other teams would be willing to pay for 2 years will be higher than if it's just for a year. But it ain't going to be the same as if they think they can keep him. And even if they think maybe they could convince him to stay, as of right now, they can't believe that he will stay. They're hoping he will. So the package the Rockets are going to get back for Harden is necessarily going to be less than it would otherwise be. even if they wait to the trade deadline to get the best possible package. In the meantime, do you want an unhappy superstar on your team? Do you need that in a rebuilding situation? Now, I've been on the air telling you that if you have a five-star player, an MVP player, you don't want a couple of three-and-a-half-star guys in exchange. Well, it's seven stars. It adds up to more than the value of five. It doesn't work that way in basketball. It's harder. It's really hard to get an MVP-caliber player on your team. And in almost every trade ever in the history of the NBA, the team who got the best player in the deal won the trade. What'd they get for Kareem Abdul-Jabbar? You don't remember. Who cares? Remember when Shaq got traded to Miami? Do you remember who was in that deal? I want to say it was like Lamar Odom and one or two other guys. Who got the better of that deal? Come on. So, Caris LeVert and Spencer Dinwiddie and a draft pick or two is not going to get you Harden if you try to trade for him straight up, but include a third team in the deal. Maybe the Sixers feel like Simmons is coming off an injury. Simmons and Embiid are probably better off separate. Could we get Dinwiddie and LeVert? Now put that on the team with Tobias Harris and Al Horford and get some draft picks and maybe we're in a better position now. Something like that in a three-team deal. Rockets are under pressure to make a trade. Like, it doesn't have to be right now. It may not be till the trade deadline, but Harden's going to wind up in Brooklyn. You hear what I'm saying? When an NBA superstar lets it be known, I want to play in a, fill in the blank, in a specific destination, he's going to play there. He will play there. Even if he has to take not a direct route to that destination, he's going to get there. Look what they did to Kyrie, right? Kyrie wanted out of Cleveland. I'm sure he had destinations he preferred over Boston. He got dealt to the Celtics. Not bad. It was a good spot. But it wasn't the one he wanted. Now he's where he wants to be. Is it possible that happens to James Harden? He has to have a pit stop somewhere before he gets to where he wants to be? Yeah, it's possible. But look what just happened with AD. I think it's much more likely that even if someone has a better package, theoretically they could offer the Rockets than Brooklyn or Brooklyn in a three-way deal, because they know Harden won't stay, they ain't going to offer it. This is Jalen Rose on Get Up this morning.
I know that we're talking about Harden either wanting to go team up with D'Antoni with the Nets or with Daryl Morey again with the Sixers. But in a vacuum, I don't love it. Let me repeat that. In a vacuum, I don't love it. Now, if you're the Houston Rockets, you bet not be doing a deal for James Harden that don't include Kyrie Irving. So I don't see those three actually playing together. But if it does happen, here's what we're going to see. One guy with the ball and the other two guys watching.
Well, I agree with a lot of that, actually. Even on the surface, it seems like I disagree based on what I just said. No, I agree with that. Harden and Kyrie on the same team are not an ideal fit. In other words, Harden, Kyrie, and KD, if you just added up their talent, they will achieve less than, they'll be less effective than just the height of their talents combined. But the height of those talents combined is so dizzying that even if they don't achieve compared to that potential, just having two MVP caliber players and another all-star plus on your team, even when the pieces don't fit right, you're still going to be better than everybody else. That's the way it works in the NBA. You get the MVP caliber players on your team first. You figure out how they're going to play together next. Straight Talk Wireless, everything for less, only at Walmart. Ryan Clark joins us on the Shell Pennzoil Performance Line. What's up, RC?
What up, my man? How you doing?
Good. I don't know. We agreed with too much stuff on the air today. I don't even know what you're doing on the show today. What are you saying? Well, you're going to make a point, and I'm going to say, good point, and vice versa?
Well, listen, when you do a radio show, though, it's not for us to debate, bro. We're not here to disagree.
That's true. That's good. That's said like a true pro. Ryan Clark. I remember when he was just getting into the business, Raj. Ryan Clark, wide-eyed kid, breaking into the biz. Now he's a grizzled old veteran. Ryan, the Saints without Drew Brees. I look at the schedule. Even, 5 weeks from now, it's the Chiefs. I think you hold him back until the last, you know, second to last week of the season, maybe. Like they're saying 2 to 3 weeks, even if it's 4 to 6 weeks. He still has two regular seasons to go, regular season games to go before the playoffs, and mess around with this motivation. This might be the year the Saints go all the way.
Yeah, I think you hold him out, Max. Like, this is not a time to rush Drew Brees, especially when your team has the Falcons, in between with that, the Broncos and the Eagles after that. You expect Jameis Winston to be able to quarterback a team that's better on paper than all of those teams, has a great coach, past those teams, and put yourself really in a good position to give Drew Brees some rest, allow him to come back, be ready for the playoffs, kind of get in the rhythm before, and truly try to make your one last run with Drew Brees. Because if you watch him move around, you watch him throw the ball, you watch him take this punishment, I believe this has to be it, Max. So why not give him his best chance to win a championship this year?
Yeah, I mean, listen, when you got fractured ribs on both sides of your body and a punctured lung and you're over 40 and you're a family guy, I'm sure there is a thought in your mind, especially when you almost retired last year, you know, heading into this season, I'm sure there's a thought in your mind, how do I still want to run through that brick wall, right? But to me, Ryan, because if he starts to think that, he's going to think, damn it, this is it for me. This is my last shot. They went out and got me Emmanuel Sanders before the season. They went and got Quan Alexander, the linebacker, at the trade deadline. I'm getting my guys back healthy now. You know, like all those things, I got to think he sees, like he'll be the most motivated version of himself and rested. We've seen in recent years when, like, I took the Saints to beat the Rams that year, I think, I don't even remember, because it's Brees versus Goff. Give me Brees in that situation. But Brees was actually not good. He looked like worn down by then. He's about to get 3, 4, 5, 6 weeks off.
No, I think that's what we've seen the last few playoffs. Maybe not the Minneapolis Miracle, but when you look at him against the Rams, even the week before against the Philadelphia Eagles, go back to last year, being outplayed by Kirk Cousins, even after having 5 weeks off early in the season because of Teddy Bridgewater, this is what he needs. I talk to people in the organization. I know people that work there, and they say, you know, Drew Brees has to fight and work to be healthy enough, to be strong enough, to be able to throw the ball on Sundays, because it takes so much of his body in order to do that. Let's give him this rest. You have all these things around him. This is the best opportunity for him. And you are 100% correct, Max. They didn't lose games and because of the people around Drew Brees the last couple of playoffs. They've kind of lost games because of Drew Brees. Those games have been closed because Drew wasn't the Drew we're used to seeing. So this break at this time, doing it the right way, gives him his best opportunity.
I want to talk about Taysom Hill for a second. You know, in baseball, you can have a guy who just throws left-handed. And because of that, he can't play shortstop, right? It's just the geometry of a baseball field. And so he has to be put at some position where he has less defensive value. And because he doesn't hit as well for a first baseman, say, as for a shortstop, he doesn't make the Hall of Fame. And it's just because he's left-handed, right? I think of Keith Hernandez, who was an excellent first baseman, and maybe he's a second baseman or a shortstop if he throws right. At any rate, I think of Taysom Hill. Ryan, in a way, he's like the best football player I've ever seen. You know, like, but he's not properly suited to be the best player in the NFL. By that I mean the dude has kind of elite speed. Like, he is fast. He's rugged and strong. He can really catch the ball, and he can throw the ball. But there are faster guys. There are better route runners. There are guys with better hands. And there are guys who, like, read defenses quicker, right? So none of those one skills that he has so many of translates to him really being an elite player. So he's an elite sort of gadget player. But Sean Payton spent, I mean, I'd love to have him on any team if I had a team, but Sean Payton has spent a lot of time trying to convince me and others that actually Taysom Hill is the quarterback of the future. Okay, now Drew Brees is down. I'm expecting to see Jameis. Like, it seems to me that Sean Payton is fronting about Taysom Hill. Like, he has some stake in tricking people into believing that about Taysom Hill. Do you know what I mean? And what could that reason be? Why does he want us to believe Taysom Hill is going to be the quarterback?
I don't know. Like, that's what's confusing to me. When you listen to Chris Collinsworth, or you listen to whoever's doing the Monday night game, and they talk about the way Sean Payton gushes over Taysom Hill. When Taysom Hill's career high for rushing and passing were 54 yards rushing, 48 yards passing, and he had those both against the Tampa Bay Buccaneers on a night the Buccaneers didn't show up to the game.
Right.
And so when I watch him throw a football, I haven't seen Taysom Hill throw a football and go, oh, my gosh, he has it. Right? Now, we've seen him run and do some things in some gadget-type situations where you're like, man, this dude can run. This dude is tough. This dude can catch the ball.
he can do
a lot of things, but he doesn't do any one thing. And you say, you know what? If he did this consistently, he's a star.
You know, right? who he's like to me, Ryan? He's like, Odell Beckham can do all those things, but he can do one of the things better than anyone else. Taysom Hill is
absolutely
like an Odell Beckham Jr. minus right. that one thing that he does better than everyone else.
No, absolutely. And so, like, you don't really have a spot for him, but the spot he plays. You know that he's, like you said, he's a football player. He's not necessarily a position player, and that's the way Sean Payton uses him.
Yeah, I don't know why he's so invested in tricking people into thinking that he'll be the quarterback. Meantime, Jameis has a chance to restock his value. Resurrect his career, talking to Ryan Clark of ESPN fame and Pittsburgh Steeler championship fame. I want to talk to you, Ryan, about the Steelers. Mike Tomlin, if anyone heard the sound that we were playing all day on ESPN on all the shows of Mike Tomlin talking about, we have immense respect or whatever he said for every team in the league. And I was ready to play football for this guy. This dude is a motivator. And because of that, it seems to me there was no letdown against the Bengals. They curb stomped the Bengals, right? There was no letdown against the, do you think the Steelers can go undefeated this year?
You know, I think they can. That doesn't mean I believe that they will. It's just hard, Max. It's hard to show up every day and be locked in every day enough to win. You know, you're going to have bad days, and sometimes the ball doesn't bounce your way. But I think I love what Mike Tomlin's doing here, making them focus on the Jaguars. Because if you focus and beat the Jaguars, now you understand what you set yourself up for on Thanksgiving Day against the Ravens. You can basically seal the AFC North. And now you move in and you have the Buffalo Bills down the road and the Colts, and maybe you end up 15-1. Or like you said earlier today, 14-2. But that's a great season. That's a season that gives you an opportunity to be the number one seed and get the bye going into the playoffs. And truly, that's what you're focused on. But the ball bounces the right way. Some things go the way the Steelers need them. Yeah, they can be undefeated, but I'm not expecting that to happen.
They don't have enough of a margin for error. In a way, that's helped them, though, because they have to be focused every game. But I root for the Steelers because as a kid, if your local team sucked, you were either a Cowboys fan if you didn't have a soul, or you were a Steelers fan if you're a real football fan. So I grew up a Steelers fan, you know. Mean Joe Green had the commercials. He was on the Great Space Coasters, a morning show for kids back then and stuff like that. And all I knew was Steelers. So, like, I actually look at the schedule and I root for the Steelers still as kind of my AFC team. And when I see the Ravens again, they already beat the Ravens on the road. But, Ryan, you know how this rivalry goes. If you beat, it's almost, I would have felt better if they lost to the Ravens already, you know? I just feel like they're going to get the best possible version of Baltimore, and they're going to host them, but still, hard to imagine them sweeping the Ravens this year. That may be their toughest test.
No, absolutely. Listen, you go against the Ravens after losing to them, understanding what this rivalry is, but also the Ravens have something to prove. You got to think, other than probably in the playoffs last year, Max, we've all been riding with the Ravens. You know, we thought the Ravens last year were the best team in football. You know, obviously you had Patrick Mahomes, but they
played better than the Chiefs all year, yeah.
They really did. They ran through the season, and we were backing them. Like, we believed it. Like, we thought that was the new age of football. Here come the Ravens to win a championship with a quarterback with his legs. And then it kind of all fell apart, and now you lose to the Pittsburgh Steelers. You lose to Kansas City. You go and you get beat by the New England Patriots, who's not having a great year. Their backs are against the wall, and they have a coach who I believe can coach with his back against the wall. But I believe they have a quarterback who lives that way, a quarterback who wasn't a five-star, a quarterback who wasn't the first overall pick, who's always wanted to prove something. And this is his opportunity. And I expect him to come out fighting, and I expect the best Lamar Jackson and the best Baltimore Ravens when they see the Pittsburgh Steelers on Thanksgiving.
Yeah, could you imagine? I'm listening to Mike Tomlin talking. Could you imagine being Mike Tomlin's kid? You bring home a report card. You get like a B in, like, I don't know, like art history or something. Come on, Dad, it's art history. The lecture you get from this dude. Every class is important. You know, this dude, he's got these, like, really, that coach is a guy who, if they're, you know, when you look at the schedule, you look at trap games. The Jaguars are a trap game, for sure. Of course, how could you not sleep on them? No, Tomlin won't let them sleep. He will not let them sleep. The Bengals and the Browns could have been that way. They're divisional rivals, right? So they're highly motivated, but the Steelers are especially better than the Bengals. So I was thinking, ooh, that's going to be a close, tough game. May come down in the end. Joe Burrow wins it, you know? What was it, 36, 38 to 10?
The Max Kellerman Show, the podcast.
Max Kellerman Show, ESPN Radio, ESPN Plus, the ESPN app, Sirius XM Channel 80, and on your smart speaker. If you are over, I don't know, 40, 45 years old, and you're a sports fan, that means back in the day you used to watch some boxing. And you might remember Juan Rodan, who was a rugged, big-punching Argentine middleweight in the 80s, fought Marvin Hagler, who was the best pound-for-pound fighter for years, and scored the only official knockdown of Hagler, although replay showed it was a cuff, and he kind of pulled him forward behind the ear, as I recall. Anyway, Rodan earned that title shot by beating the hell out of a good, fun TV fighter, Frank the Animal Fletcher, on the undercard of Hagler Duran. I bring all this up because Juan Rodan passed today, apparently, of COVID. And so that is a sad thing for boxing fans, and I figured I'd say it, you know? Rest in peace, Juan Rodan. COVID is no joke, and there's a vaccine now, it looks like. In the final stage, you're like Pfizer, right? It's 90, 95% effective, and that's great. And there's rapid testing, and testing is much more accessible than it used to be. So there's lots of good news, and pretty soon we'll have, hopefully, effective management of the pandemic at the highest levels of our government. We haven't had that yet. But things have gotten worse before they get better, as everyone predicted. And, you know, COVID is no joke, and my thoughts go out to, or, you know, I'm thinking about Juan Rodan now, just passed. Max Kellerman Show, presented by Progressive Insurance. Is Antonio Brown about to be disciplined again? What do you do with Antonio Brown? This dude. In the Venn diagram of emotional problems, of people with emotional problems on the one hand, people who are just jerks on the other, and people who are just not that smart on the other. You have three hands in this case. I mean, in the Venn diagram of those three things, boy, Antonio Brown is the shaded area, it seems. 6-1 Chiefs versus the 6-3 Raiders on Sunday Night Football. Raiders got a shot to sweep the Chiefs? Imagine that. What if the Chiefs only have two losses this year, both times it's to the Raiders? And remember what Casey Joyner, the football scientist, has said on this show repeatedly, that the Chiefs want to avoid shootouts. I was shocked when I heard that the first time. The Chiefs? Kansas City wants to avoid shootouts? When Patrick Mahomes came on the scene in 2018, they were winning every game in shootouts. It's like, damn, don't get in a shootout with the Chiefs. In boxing, there's an old expression, don't hook with a hooker. Guy has a good jab, you want to jab with him because it can disrupt the jab. And even if he hits you first, he's not going to knock you out with a jab. You hook with a hooker, that hook lands their first fight over. Why would you want to go toe-to-toe with Patrick Mahomes and the Chiefs offense? But apparently, the last couple seasons, like starting the beginning of last season, the Chiefs, they're above 500 in shootouts, but not much above 500. And in every other type of game, they're basically undefeated. The Raiders dragged them into a shootout first time and won. Can they do it again? That's good. By the way, you're in the division with the Chiefs and you sweep them? Oof. It ain't the Super Bowl, but it's your Super Bowl. And the Raiders, look, Gruden got to that team and he deals Khalil Mack and what's he doing and all this and... But they handed him a 10-year deal. He had that. So, you know, it's amazing. When guys have security, they can actually follow a plan. Too much of the NFL in particular, I think, is self-preservation. Why was it so slow, the NFL, to embrace analytics? And by the way, analytics, just common sense stuff like go for it on fourth down, dummies. There's 2 yards to go. What are you doing? You're going to give up 25% of all your offensive possessions because you're scared of a negative outcome? I understand once upon a time it's field position, right? But now the people score 1,000,000 points a game. It's not a field position game like it used to be. Go for it. Why was the NFL so slow to adopt that? Because coaches are so worried about their jobs that they don't, if they go against the orthodoxy and it doesn't work, and remember, even if something works 60% of the time, almost half the time it doesn't work, and when it works, no one's going to be like, yeah, he's showing us a new way. When it doesn't work, they're going to say, hey, stupid. The book says, yeah, but the book is written by morons. Why should I follow the book? No, the NFL was slow to change because coaches fear negative outcomes because they're always thinking about their jobs far too often. GMs, too. You know, a coach drafts a quarterback. It's not working. Oh, sorry, a GM drafts a quarterback. It's not working out. You know he's going to stay with that quarterback. He's going down with that quarterback because he's tied to it. Now you spent the such and such pick on a quarterback. When the smart thing would be cut your losses, draft another quarterback. Or, you know what I mean? But Gruden had that 10-year deal. So he had security. So if it didn't work in the first couple of years, hey, it's all right. And because of that, he was able to follow a longer-term blueprint. And it's paying off right now. Raiders are good. And they legit could beat the Chiefs twice in the same season. Most teams can't beat the Chiefs once in two seasons. The Raiders might beat them twice in the same season. In shootouts! Is there a red flag?
The Max Kellerman Show. The podcast.
To get right down to it.
We got you covered.
Let me tell you what I think it means.
No doubt.
All right, let's go, Raj. I say no doubt right. If I agree. I say nah, son, yep. If I don't.
That's right. You won't get it right. But here we go.
Yeah.
David Ortiz turns 46 today. My question to you, my statement to you, Max, is Big Papi is the best DH of all time.
No doubt.
No doubt.
But if David Ortiz's name comes up, I must say, anyone could have had David Ortiz. He was considered a potentially good platoon hitter as a DH first baseman, right, with the Minnesota Twins.
Yeah.
And then suddenly he became a monster in the middle of the PED era.
Coincidence.
So there's no doubt, and there's also Ed Lover's, come on, son.
All right.
Yeah.
Hey,
although I got to say, even when he was just like a nice maybe left-handed platoon DH type with the Twins, I wanted the Yankees to pick him up. I thought, oh, big left-handed guy, maybe hit 20 home runs in a platoon DH situation, get him on the cheap. Good.
All right. Hey, it's a red flag that top NBA draft prospect Anthony Edwards said he preferred to play in the NFL.
No doubt. It is a red flag. You know, he's been compared to Dwayne Wade, and I said it on First Take today. Dwayne Wade was a very skillful player. There have been many players as skillful as Dwayne Wade. That's not what made Dwayne Wade Dwayne Wade. He didn't have range on his shot, for example. What made Dwayne Wade Dwayne Wade, the reason he even got as skillful as he became, was because he was hungry in a different kind of way for greatness. He was thirsty. He had a next-level desire. Dwayne Wade, Kobe Bryant, Michael Jordan, those kind of like slashing players that you're like, oh, what's the upside? You ain't going to ever be that if you don't know, if you're not sure. Now, if he's just in, like Kyler Murray wants to play baseball, that's cool. And Kyler Murray's excellent. He might wind up to be actually great. So Russell Wilson wants to play baseball still, right? And he is great. But if you're not sure about a guy, he doesn't shoot it well, for example, from three, and you want to know how he's going to develop, and you're not convinced he loves the sport, for me, that's a red flag.
I hear you. Hey, the Saints will be just fine in Jameis Winston's hands. It's those same hands that eats the W's. You ever see that little dumb thing he does where he eats W's?
Yeah. I would say, nah, son. And I say that because by that, I'm going to interpret that as meaning like if Drew Brees is finished. right? If he doesn't play at all this season, he retires, you know, and going forward, it's Jameis Winston. No. Jameis Winston's not that kind of quarterback. Now, will they be fine in terms of this season if Drew Brees can get back, let's say, 6 weeks from now? No doubt.
No doubt.
There it is. I give you both a nice one and a no doubt. Because they got 7 wins. Jameis just got to go one game under 500, you know, right? And they'll still wind up with double-digit wins. That should get them to the playoffs. And when Drew Brees gets back, all bets are off. Go ahead.
All right, one more for maybe we can sneak in a call. Antonio Brown, you've heard of him a lot. He may have violated the NFL's personal conduct policy yet again. The Bucs receiver must face more discipline.
No doubt. If in fact he violated the personal conduct policy, I don't know what to do with Antonio Brown anymore. I don't know what to do with the guy anymore. Like, I'm like, he doesn't deserve another chance. Da, 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 da. He's shown he doesn't understand. Then for a while, he stays off social media. He stops doing stupid things. He has been charged with things that he has not, the crime has been proven, right? Like all that kind of, I thought, okay, eventually he should be allowed to ply his trade. If he stays out of trouble, he can't stay out of trouble. As I said, he may be emotionally disturbed, right? And that's a real thing. And someone like that should get help. But that doesn't mean he's not also a jerk, independent of that. And it also doesn't mean he just may not be very smart, right? And or any two of those things, or any one of those things, right? But I think he's all three. He chose judgment that's so bad. But look, bad judgment, like, in terms of being impulsive, that could be emotional problems, right? Mental health problems. Being a jerk, okay, you're a jerk. But the not-so-smart stuff is, you're a jerk, and then you post it on social media because you think it makes you look good. You don't even understand that it's jerky behavior that makes you look bad. That's not smart. So the evidence tells me he's all three. Those three things can exist independently. But in AB, they all exist in the same guy. And by the way, I've interacted with AB before. He's on Sports Nation. He's always been nice to me. Like, he's fine. He seems like a regular guy when you talk to him. But damn. That doesn't mean he is a regular guy. Do the Rockets have to trade James Harden? I'll tell you next. Max Kellerman Show, ESPN Radio. Oh, I have 10 more seconds, I'm told.
Oh.
I'll say it again.
Take a caller.
Max Kellerman Show, ESPN Radio.
The Max Kellerman Show, the podcast.